You're listening to the How to Make Money Podcasting Podcast. I'm your host and explorer, Jace Kraft, and I invite you to join me while I explore behind the scenes of a podcaster monetizing their podcast and learn how you can too. Whether you haven't made a dollar from your podcast or you're making thousands of dollars, this episode you are listening to right now will help you explore what's possible for your podcast. Hey everybody, I'm sitting here with Romina M. from Coffee with Romina podcast, and she has a background in sales. So we're going to actually talk about how she's been converting guests to clients with her podcast and all the other ways that she's been monetizing her podcast. Again, that's Coffee with Romina. They're hitting episode 106 as we are recording this and debating whether to go from one episode a week to two episodes a week. So exciting times for Romina. Romina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
Awesome. So 106 episodes, that's a big number. I actually did a poll in the Facebook group that I run and about, you know, who's less than 100, who's over 100. And it's a very small percentage that make it to that 100 plus episode. So I'm curious to know when you started. And then how consistent you have been to get to that 106. Has it been every week or have you had some breaks in there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually started June 2019. So it'll be the 2-year anniversary soon. June 28th, actually, 2019 was the first 3 episodes that I launched because after a lot of Google research, I came to find out it's the best thing to launch 3 episodes at the same time. So that's what I did. And we hit episode 100 a couple of weeks ago, and soon we're launching episode 106. But because we do so much content before, so as of right now, we have enough content all the way till September. Wow. So that's why we are trying to change strategy to see maybe we should go bi-weekly, twice a week instead of one episode a week. It is a lot of podcast production itself towards the editing, videos, social promotion, all that fun stuff. So that's why we're kind of debating. I do have a lot of projects that I'm working on at the same time, so I just want to make sure, if I stick to 2 times a week, that's going to be the new norm.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a lot of progress in that. But, I mean, honestly, I started the podcasting journey because I did not like my job. I felt like I was stuck in a situation that I had a lot more to bring to the table, and I was working corporate, so I felt like there was a cap put into me. I couldn't go further. Mm-hmm. And even when I wanted feedback towards hey, what can I do to actually move forward? I would never get feedback. So I was like, okay, I'm sure I'm not the only one that is going through this. So I'm actually going to reach out to my connections or through people in LinkedIn to ask them fundamental questions on how to overcome career and personal obstacles. And that has been, that's the podcast ever since. And consistency wise, we have been pretty consistent. Besides last year, if you have heard the news, there was a global pandemic going on. So it kind of got to me for a minute. I felt as I was trying my best to keep my authenticity and my mental health on the line. And I just didn't feel authentic enough if I was sitting here and giving advice to other people whenever, through the interviews, whenever I was not progressing enough myself. So I did take a month off the podcasting. I had the content, but I just did not release it because I felt like people had other, issues going on instead of just sitting here listening from the professionals and be like, do this and do this. But it's like, okay, but you're not really getting what I'm going through. So that's why I took a month off. I did a lot more exploring myself. I had to kind of recalibrate and just renovate the whole strategy for the podcasting. And that's when we came back stronger. And ever since, the podcast has been going even further. So the podcasters that are listening, if you take a moment of break, that's perfectly fine. That's okay. I don't do seasons. I do weekly. But if you need a moment of break, it's perfectly fine to do that. So don't overload yourself. You think oh my God, I'm missing the deadline. Because you also want to make sure that you better wait another week for the episode to be really good and to be perfect timing than launch something just because you need to get that off your to-do checklist pretty much.
Yeah, for sure. Did you tell your listeners or somehow say, hey, I'm going to go on a month? Or was it just kind of you went cold and then you came back and say, hey, I'm back.
I did kind of go cold, and then after the first episode that launched, but I made a social media post about it. I just didn't launch an episode specifically for it. But then the comeback episode, which was with Gleb Tsiberski, and we talked about avoiding disasters, which was like perfect for it. Yeah. Before we even launched, like before the interview and anything, I did mention like, hey guys, I apologize. I've been going off like a month off. This is the reason why. I definitely want to make sure I bring great information to the table. This is a topic that definitely matches with whatever is going on in the world right now, how to avoid disasters in business and personal life. So I did explain why I didn't, I definitely owe that to the audience. I didn't just like, hey guys, welcome to another episode. Like, no, I it's an intimate relationship that you have with your audience. So you definitely want to, you know, pretty much tell them what's happening, keep them in touch. Yeah. And if you have seasonal episodes, like seasons for your podcast, is very different. But if they're used to you weekly, they're like, okay, what the heck happened with her? Like, she lied. Like, yeah. What is this happening? She's been like telling us for like 80 something episodes, do this. Like, is she just not following her own advice now? Like, what's happening there? So I had to do an explanation of it.
Yeah. Did you get feedback from that? Like, were people reaching out to you and say, hey, thanks for the info or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only the audience, but also once I start interview, like once we got back in the production, it was interesting because the new guests that were going to be on the show, they always found it weird that I took a month off, and I didn't tell them like whenever we'd have like the pre-call, you know, because I always do pre-introduction call before my interviews. So all of them actually, as a matter of fact, which is a different caliber of the guests that we've been having ever since as well, all of them have said like congratulate me on being very authentic and keeping it real and being very original, because a lot of people sometimes they are setting themselves on a different pedestal and they're not true to themselves. So not only the audience but also the guests actually respect the fact that I explained and I went into details to why I took a month off.
Yeah, that's good. I think always being authentic, you know, and I think authenticity is kind of a buzzword now where it's like, yeah, everybody wants to be authentic, but how do you truly do that? And I think it's really more about vulnerability, you know, and showing your true colors than quote unquote authenticity, because authentic is a kind of a weird word, but vulnerable, like people know, and there's kind of an emotion to that word where it's, you can feel vulnerability yourself. Other people can feel authentic about you, or they feel that you're authentic, but it's through the vulnerability that you're feeling is how they're feeling authentic. I'm killing this word, but
I think it's absolutely very important, because at the end of the day, I believe you are a Fortune 1 company. Everybody is one of a kind. You don't have, even if you're a twin, you're different personalities, right? So you definitely have to stick to your true self whenever you are launching a podcast or any live streams or whatever type of audience you are building. Because number one, no matter what, if you stay true to yourself, you will always have the answer. You'll always be true. And that's what people will like. Because if you try to do something just to manipulate the algorithm or just try to be cool or be trendy, the trends change. Like what was happening last month is now what's happening this month. But if you stay true to yourself, if your core values, mission and vision of your personality, transparency through the podcast, that's when you'd actually be able to build that loyal audience as well, because that's what the relationship, the fundamental relationship, that's how they get built, by being true to who you are.
Yeah, it's a good point to keep like your core the same, no matter what trend is happening, you know, but then
absolutely,
you can also adjust to the trend, but keeping your core. You know, I think obviously Gary Vee does a huge, very good job at this. And he's just the most known. That's why I bring him up. But you can see like his core is produce content, you know, be authentic, give value. And then he explores the trends on how to do that.
Yeah, you match it with what's happening towards seeing like, okay, like let's say X trend is happening right now. Okay, what are my opinions on it? What is the what do I get from it, right? And then how can I bring this to the audience to maybe make the audience think a little bit different? Because if you're a podcaster, right away, you're thinking different. Not everybody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to make a podcast today, and I'm going to spend 5 hours editing a 30-minute episode, or, you know, spend 5 hours back end to final product for 30 minutes. So right there, just be transparent on the way you think, because also something to remember is one single episode can make you or break you, because you never know who's the audience. The audience can be, if you want to be an author, can be the book dealer, can be a book publisher that just listens only to one episode of yours. If you want to be on media or PR, they can see how you talk. If you work in sales and negotiations, they can listen to a single episode on what you think about sales. Mm-hmm. So also, that's why it's important to be true to yourself, because one episode alone, you guys, can make you or break you, because you're sharing your intellectual asset throughout all of every episode possible. Yeah. So it's definitely important to stay true.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one caveat I would say is sometimes if you think that way, where one, you know, can make or break you, then it puts almost too much pressure on the each episode individually. And I can see a lot of people getting stuck in that. I talk to a lot of podcasters on a daily basis where there's so much fear of putting that one episode out there, or putting, you know, especially that first, you know, first five or first 10. And I guess my thought is it's not going to be perfect. And I know if you listen to your first like five episodes, Romina, you know, they're going to be way different than they are now. But the idea is likely somebody that's going to, you know, potentially hire you as a speaker isn't going to listen to your first episodes now. They're going to listen to your latest ones.
It's a learning progress too. But number one that you have to remember, because a lot of podcast communities that have Facebook pages, mm-hmm. or a lot of people that want to start brand new podcasts, they're like, spend thousands of dollars on equipment. And then whenever you're talking about strategy, whenever you're talking about your calendar, you're talking about the content, they're stuck. Mm-hmm. So literally, if you listen to my first probably like 30 episodes, the audio was horrible.
Yeah.
But the content is there.
Exactly.
And of course, the content gets better with the time being, because you learn throughout the process. You are learning from your guests. You are learning from conferences. You're learning from webinars you're attending. You're learning from reading or anything that you're doing. So it's okay. Like, but also, don't pay a lot of attention to the audio. A lot of people just spend so much time and so much money on the audio, and they lose the focus on the actual content, because the audio, let me put it to you this way. Nobody's going to email you, okay? And be like, man, your audio for this episode sucked.
Yeah.
But people will email you, say, your content for this episode was amazing. Mm-hmm. Or your content was horrible. You need to do better.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, that's just how it is pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree with content first, and then worry about the audio second, you know, as you get rolling. But you know, you can start a podcast on a very low budget as well. So, but I want to get back to your podcast, how you're monetizing it, and how you are now compared, you know, when you first started. But what was like the first time that you started monetizing your podcast? How early into that podcasting career, if you will, were you?
Yeah, so for the first year, I treated the podcast as a hobby, because, again, I started because I still like my job. I wanted to run away. And then I attended PodFest March of last year, and I learned so much more. And I was like, oh, my God, like, people are actually making a lot of money out of this. Yeah. Like, I just thought this was a cool thing to do, because I'm using it as a hobby. And I don't remember exactly who said this, but it said, if you treat your podcast as a hobby, you will never be a CEO of a business, of a podcasting business. So I was like, that's very interesting to say. So literally right March last year, March like 7th to 8th, it was like the end date of the conference. That's when COVID broke. Mm. And right after that, unfortunately, I was let go of my marketing project manager job. So I was like, okay, I learned 101 things on this conference, right? Let me actually reach out to some of my connections, see if they need any help. And little did I know, the very first person that I called, he said, yes, I had launched the podcast, but the company is taking forever for them to do the production. I think they're overwhelmed and I need somebody else. And he's like, this is how much I charge them. I'll pay you like exact the same fee. Just do my podcast with a faster process. Like, I need the episodes to be at least 2 to 3 weeks before the launch date so I can get a chance to listen to them, because my scheduling is so busy and my, you know, my consulting is so busy.
Yeah.
So I was like, absolutely fine. So June of 2019, the podcast was launched. April of 2019 was the first time that I was able to monetize the podcast. And it started going up from there because I started editing podcasts, something that I've been doing for myself for the longest time.
Sure.
I started building marketing campaigns, something that I have, you know, experience on. I started training people on sales because each connection, once I start telling people like, hey, I'm good at this, like I can help you with this, I can help you with that, that's when the whole traffic for the business start coming in. And ever since, I mean, we have 467 Radius, which is my business name. We have clients on retainer fees. We have clients that would be just project-based or like even public speaking. I'm going to Tampa next month to give a big public speaking. And it's June till August so far. It's like public speaking every month that we're scheduled in we're slowly going back to the norm as well. Or the closest to the norm that we can be at this point.
Yeah. So... I know public speaking is not something that we've explored too much on the podcast thus far. So I'm curious to know, like, did you start promoting yourself as a public speaker to, you know, get your first couple gigs and then, you know, people started finding you, or maybe you're still, you know, reaching out, or was it somebody that kind of noticed you and just said, hey, you know, could you come speak at this?
Yeah, so the very first official public speaking that I had, it was here locally. New York Life Insurance was organizing an event with Small Business for Jacksonville, Florida. And the person that organized it, they had been on my podcast. And they're like, hey, we never actually touched base on podcasting world, so do you mind coming and speaking regarding podcasting, doing a presentation? So I was like, sure, I can do that. And then I keep getting people from the audience keep reaching out and says, hey, also, would like for you to come and talk about sales. I also would like for you to come and talk about this.
Yeah.
You seem like an expert in this area. And then also from the guests, because it's a conversation, just like what we're having right now. But because I would have those prior calls with my guests to make sure the energy, everything aligns. Because my episodes, I really dive in, and sometimes we do ask sensitive questions to the guests, but we have to make sure that all the cards are on the table, we're all on the same page. So whenever I'll tell them, like, I'm an expert at this or X, Y, or Z, that would ask for either help with their teams when it comes to sales, or they would ask for me to do a webinar for their sales team, or they would ask me to do a speaking, which would be over Zoom for the longest time, for their team towards talking about, you know, communication, talking about how to build trust with their customer, since I do come from over 10 years of sales experience. So I didn't necessarily go for it to, like, look for it specifically, but people saw my skills, and sometimes I feel like we get on our own head, but if we allow others to actually say like, hey, you're good at this, and actually take that information and run with it, or just be like, maybe I'm into something here, and work more into it, you would be surprised of how many more opportunities would open up, because again, kind of going back to what we talked earlier, stay true to yourself, and people will see that, and actually... podcasting is a great way for you to promote your knowledge, to share with others also what you know. And a lot of people, I mean, a lot of companies, whenever they're about to hire you as a public speaker, they will go to your podcast, or they will go to episodes that you've done, and they'll see like, okay, let's see how she talks, or let's see how he talks. Let's see if she can talk for a while. Let's see how her brain works on a certain things.
Yeah.
So they'll listen to a couple of episodes to also get like a full thing of like, how do you work and how do you pretty much speak and function to see if you'd be a good fit as well.
Yeah. And do you think they'll listen to your podcast or podcast that you have been on? Because, you know...
Both.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll listen to both, because a podcast that you have been on, they definitely want to see how you are as a guest on somebody else's podcast. And on your podcast, they want to see how you are in charge. Because your podcast, I consider my guests being the star of the show, because without them, I wouldn't have a show.
Exactly.
But they also want to see your moderating skills. I mean, a lot of people for Clubhouse right now, for instance, a lot of my friends that have had podcasts for a while, they're hired as moderators on big celebrities for their rooms, because they listen to how they are on the Q&A portion, on the questioning portion, on the moderating portion. So there is different concepts you can have. I mean, even as a moderator, you can, I've been a moderator for SHRM, Society of Human Resource Management, multiple times because they've listened to my podcast. I was a part of the chapter. I lead a chapter for them for school. So it's a lot of areas you can go about public speaking. It's not necessarily just you and the stage.
For sure. So public speaking, you know, there's kind of like unpaid and then there's paid gigs. Was it paid right away for you or what's kind of the breakdown on that?
You're going to have to do some unpaid gigs in order for you to get paid because nobody's born a genius.
Exactly.
If you're born a genius, if you can get the stage and rock the stage, congratulations. Like, I would love for you to teach me and mentor me, but that's not a thing. People learn through the process. So you need to fall on your face a couple of times and maybe bruise your face a little bit by free public speaking. Because here's the thing. If you also do paid public speaking when you're not an expert, that might be your one-time shot for the big thing. Mm-hmm. But if you fail that, then you fail it. You're not going to be able to have a second chance. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's also good to do multiple ones that would be unpaid, even though it's like, oh my God, I'm doing all this work and everything. But you gain so much experience through that. So when the paid one comes in, you already have laid down the work. You know what to do. You know how the audience engages. You know what not to do and everything else.
Are you getting paid now for public speaking?
Yes.
How many unpaid events did you have to do before you got to that point?
Unpaid, I don't know the number on top of my head, but probably like 10, 15.
Okay.
In that range, I would say. And then paid ones were in like the 20s right now.
Okay. And if you don't mind, we try to be, you know, as transparent as possible of what a podcast can bring in as far as monetization. So what are some of the like, speaking fees? Like, what are you making for an event?
It depends. There would be events that you get paid anywhere between $1,000 to $2,000. And then it would be events that would go anywhere between $5,000 to $7,000. So it really depends on the audience. It depends on the organization you're talking for. It depends on the topic that you have. It depends on, you know, a lot of times you might end up going in getting unpaid speaking. And, you know, you might be the only one that is not paid, but everybody else is paid because you're playing with a whole nother caliber of speakers that you're just new and fresh to the table. So that's where the sales and negotiation comes in play. And that's why, you know, whenever you're trying to pitch a product or a service, you need to have that backup data, right? That's why podcasting is a really great way for you to be like, hey, I've done hundreds of interviews. At this point, I probably interviewed like over 300 people. I have 100 something episodes. I have material to this. You can literally just listen to any of my episodes. I do have the originality and I do have the brains for it, right? And that's when you can start negotiating. So the podcast is a really great backup data and portfolio for you if that's what you want to do. Or maybe you'll find out that that's not what you want to do and that's perfectly fine. But you do need to put the groundwork at first because people, whenever they get in podcasting world, sometimes they feel like they want to be Joe Rogan or, you know, like they want to be like Crime Junkies, like make thousands of dollars. But it took them a while. It took them a lot of trials. Like Joe Rogan, that's a fear factor guy. Mm-hmm. He didn't just learn how to do interviews like last year. It's 1,000-something in episodes. You know, the $1 million contract with Spotify didn't just happen overnight.
Exactly.
So you need to put in that prior work to it.
Yeah. So what about like virtual speaking gigs? There's kind of this like podcasting. Typically, you don't pay people to be on your podcast or vice versa. There's all sorts of virtual events now with obviously the pandemic. Are these events, do you see them being paid in the future? Have you got paid for a virtual event? What's kind of the landscape of that?
Yeah, I got paid for virtual events and I've done free virtual events as well. It's the same thing, just in person. You know, you might get paid, you might not. Again, it just depends on what type of event it is. It depends on who's the audience. It depends if you're working with a certain company, or it might be that you pulled in a whole marketing campaign together and you just had people pay like $20, $30, or maybe $99 for them to attend the conference and you just put on all the groundwork and you had guests on it. So it really depends on what you're working on. And I know you mentioned like the guests sometimes like pay to be on podcasts. I don't I don't do that. My thing is, I consider my guest, again, the star of the show. I know podcasters sometimes do charge their guests to be on their show. I don't pay. If I've, like, whenever I got pitched to be on a podcast, and if they tell me, like, hey, for it to be on my show is this much, I back up. I say, I'm not going to pay for yours. I already have a platform. Like, I'm bringing intellectual asset to your podcast. Why would you charge me for it? I understand as a podcaster, as a business person, that it's a lot that goes in on the back end, but welcome to the podcasting world. I'm not paying you to be on your show. You should pay me to share my knowledge.
For sure. Are you finding like the virtual events typically pay less than in person or the same?
They do pay a little bit less than in person, but then it depends. I would say it's about like, it's the same as kind of getting like a 20% discount, 25% discount, you know, if you do it virtually, because the information is still there. The content is still there. It's different if me and you are in person, like I'm using a board and I'm explaining everything, or I have a presentation and we have that, you know, in-person interaction. It's very different compared to virtual. But if you make your, you know, a lot of webinars happen through Zoom. So if you master Zoom, if you know all the Zoom, you know, features that you can use, the polling, especially a lot of people, for example, I remember I was working with one company and I wanted to create a poll. We'll create three polls over the presentation. And they did. And at the end of it, I was like, hey, can you give me the reporting of the polls? And they're like, what do you mean? And I was like, if you go on Zoom, if you click 1, 2, 3, 4, it will tell me who clicked yes, who clicked no, who clicked what. So they had no idea, like, like Zoom will actually record which attendee did what. So then after I got the reporting, I was able to reach out to the attendees personally and also do one-on-ones with them. If they, for example, liked the session, they just wish they had more information or it was longer. So you have to master the features of the platform that you're also using, because there's always the follow-up. And a lot of money is on the follow-up setup, but people tend to miss that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so this brings us to a good kind of segue into guests to clients. You're speaking with somebody. You know, you obviously do podcast production, some consulting, that kind of stuff. What's your process in converting somebody that you have as a guest to a potential client?
Yeah, so first off, I want to clarify, not every single one of my guests is my client, because that would mean that I would have like 100 people working on my team, which I don't right now. It's just me and two of my girls. But number one is we always do pre-interview meetings. I want to make sure the energy, matches with my guest. We have a good strategy for the episode. Me and my guest actually touch base on what would we like to highlight, so this way they can highlight their field of expertise, as well as I would be able to highlight my field of expertise. So we merged our questions in a way that we can both bring education, information to the episode, as well as be able to bring good content. Number two, whenever they are struggling with something, if I'm an expert at it, I will offer a free advice or a free help. That's the least I can do for them, sharing their information, their brain pretty much, on a 30-minute or 1-hour episode, however long that is. I do ask my guests, what's a new and exciting project that you're working on? And if I know information or if I'm an expert in such a field, I will tell them, hey, I actually do this. If you like my help, I would be able to help you feel more than free. A lot of times they'll say no, a lot of times they'll say yes, or a lot of times they'll say not yet, which is absolutely fine. And if it's no or not yet type of answer, you don't push it, because you created such a close relationship. Because number one, if you try to shove at somebody's face that, hey, hire me, when your episode launches, number one, like when their episode launches, they get an email from me, they get the mini clips, they get the promotions, right? I would be like the person for their connection, be like, don't go to her. She's annoying. Don't go to her. She's just going to interview you and she's just going to think all about the money. Don't go to her because of this. But because I create such a great relationship with my guests are the ones that'll be like, hey, I have a really good connection that would be really great for your podcast. I'll just do an intro email with you. And maybe not this person will be my client. Maybe the person they referred to me will be my client, because that person might need help. So it's their relationship building, their networking. And also you have to be, I know, like, coming from the sales world, a lot of people are very pressuring and very salesy. If I see a good fit and if I know for a fact I can help you, then I will tell you. But if I see that, I just don't feel like I should charge you $500 or $1,000 for a 1 hour session, for instance, to give you a free consulting. If I feel like I also have an intuition of situation. So if I can see like my help, it would be a really good conversion for you being on my show and sharing all that. I'll tell them like, hey, I'm free at this day. Let's actually have a Zoom call and I'll go over like what I know. Maybe I'll be able to help you out. Jab, jab, hook at the same time. But you have to, persuasive, but also not pushy at the same time. I hope I'm explaining this right.
Yeah, the worst thing you could do is have somebody on your show and then not let them leave until they say, like, you know, schedule a call with me and stuff, because that just leaves, like you said, a bad taste in their mouth. You're not going to get the guest referrals. You're not going to get any, you know, buddy else referred to you from that person. You're kind of burning that bridge. And when you send them the promotion, they're not going to share it because of how you treated them. And there's nothing worse than a bait and switch. You know, you kind of, you see this a lot in, now, I don't want to categorize everybody in like the multi-level marketing kind of realm, but you see it a lot in that industry where it's like, hey, I want to be, you know, your friend, get to know you, and then there's just a switch where it's like, now I'm pitching you, you know, and that never feels good, because then that whole friendship feels like it was built on, hey, I just want your money, or, you know, you to be a part of that.
Yeah, and I'm very lenient towards it. Like, I will tell you, like, hey, this is what I'm an expert on. If I can help you, perfect. If I cannot, that's okay. Because also, if you run with the mentality of, like, I will convert everybody. If you run with the mentality of being desperate for contracts, it will show. Like, I've had people that come up so desperate that I don't even want to say hi to them. Like, I'm sorry, but I don't want to say hi to you because you come out so desperate. Number one. Number two, if you get your conversion rate, like 10 to 15% as a small business owner with the fees that I charge at least, I'm good. So I don't need to convert every single person at the same time. Like, if I can convert out of 100 people, right? If I can convert 3 people, you do the math, 3 people. Let's say an average, fee for a project, like the last ones. 3 people, anywhere between $3,000 to $4,000 on a retainer fee for what you're doing. Or maybe you're taking on a project that might be $10,000 to $15,000 for 6 months and then another project later. You're still making money out of it. You also don't want to take so much on your plate that you burn yourself. Because a lot of small business owners, sometimes they're so hungry and they feel like there's so much money out there to be made. And there is a lot of money to be made, but they become so impatient. They just literally ruin what they've built from the ground up.
Yeah, you have to have your processes in place so you can have the demand. You can't just make, you know, a bunch of sales, even if it's a service-based business, when, you know, you don't have to make a product and ship it to them. You still have to perform it. You can't outsell your production team. But we're getting towards the end of our time here. A great conversation. I do want to touch on download numbers, if you're open to that. Again, it's just one thing that we try to give people an idea of where podcasters are at in download numbers, because it's so often asked and there's so limited information out there. So where were you, like, you know, a month in to your podcast, if you can remember, how many downloads now and then compared to what you're doing now?
Well, my mom was like, my mom was my biggest fan when I first launched. She would literally listen to, like, because also her English is not very good, because we're Albanians originally. And she would listen to my episode multiple times, and she'll listen from different platforms. So I'm like, Mom, like, stop. Like, I need real numbers. So I would say for the first year, I would average like 50 to 100 downloads per episode, which it was always kind of demoralizing. I'm like, these are not really good numbers. But I kept going because I'm like thinking like YouTube, right? People on YouTube needed years. People on here needed years to go through it. I'm literally nobody breaking into the podcasting world. So I don't have, you know, $100 million or $100,000 marketing campaign going after me. It's literally just me. So at first, the first year was, and like, I would say like June last year when we made the first anniversary. We had like 5,000 something, 6,000 something episodes, which was very depressing. Now we're in the 60,000s. So it's not a lot compared to other podcasts for 106 episodes. But again, the podcasting platform is a vehicle to build a brand behind my name. If you Google my name before I even launched the podcast, only my Facebook page would show up. Now it's all my podcast, it's all my project, it's all my marketing. So it's great at SEOs, it's great at building content, it's great at branding. I would say if you are driven to build a business from podcasting, not from ads of selling in your podcast, but from podcasting and relationships, stop looking at your download numbers. If I was to look at my download numbers, I would have quit episode 10. Because a lot of people, like, you know, look at that, like, oh, nobody's listening. But you'd be surprised. Like, I mean, I get emails sometimes, even the first year, I would get email from, like, Russia or from Ukraine or London. Oh, somebody listened to an episode, I'd be like, I very much enjoyed your episode. Thank you so much for sharing this. And I'm like, so out of those 5,000, 6,000, right? I get an email from, like, all the way from Asia, like, from Russia. Like, this is good. And you never know who that person is either. So I would skip, if they can make like a blind eye for your downloads, at least for the first year, do so, because it's a learning curve. It's a lot of, it's a lot of learning that you'd be able to do, even on editing or production, on what to say, what not to say. And even if you never actually continue podcasting, I actually got my marketing project manager, like I mentioned earlier. Unfortunately, I was let go because of COVID, but I got that position because I had a podcast and I was on like 40 episodes in. I did not have the marketing project manager license. I didn't have the license yet, but they found it like you took a small idea into a big project and turned into like downloads from international countries. Even though your number is small, you're nobody and you turned it. So you never know, like a podcast. And I've heard multiple case scenarios too. People will get a dream job because of a podcast. Because if I want to interview like the FBI hostage negotiator, for example, Gary Nosner, I'm nobody. If I was to, you know, email Gary, be like, hey, Gary, can we have a one-on-one? I really want to know about your FBI experience. He'll be like, who the hell are you? But I'm like, hey, I have an audience. I have a platform. Yeah, I would love to interview. I have questions. Yeah, I'm down. So also, it's a really great ticket for you to talk to higher ups and to talk to people that might have been just in your bucket list for a while. But now you do have that option.
Totally. So you said you're in the 60K now total for 106. What can you say, like, what you've done in the last month, like, so the month of April? Do you remember kind of your stats there generally?
Well, monthly, to last month actually did a lot better. We start applying the little mini clips for the video, because for the longest time I would do only audio and then start playing around with YouTube a little bit, start playing around with email campaign. Came to find out email campaigns, people get annoyed if you send them an email every week, specifically for the podcast. So instead, I worked a lot more on LinkedIn and on Instagram portion to do the mini clips. I myself use vid.io. A lot of people use Descript for it itself, so you can do so. Perfect. Yeah, so whichever platform you found more comfortable to do. And then once, I remember also I was in a Clubhouse meeting with Lewis House, and he was talking about how he uses different platforms for Facebook, the different setups for Facebook, for Instagram, for LinkedIn, for YouTube. And it was a really great session because he was breaking down like the whole marketing strategy that they use for it. So I started taking place to it. And that's, so I'd say March and April has been the highest one. So that would be like the 10-15 that the numbers have gone like way higher compared to like the before. Yeah. But it was strictly because we changed it. We do have a setup that we go every, so episode gets, I get the interview. Episode, it takes about a month and a half, 2 months to launch. From one episode alone, we would create 3 to 4 mini clips. The week of the publishing, it will go one, two, or three clips of it. Weeks after that's produced, it will go ahead and send the clips again on different platforms, as well as you would be able to give those clips to all your guests. So this way, they have content to promote themselves. And by using Bitly, also another great thing that I've learned, just for like the shortcuts of like Apple Podcast and for Spotify, by using Bitly, number one, I would also be able to like track how many clicks this link got, how many clicks this link got, what did I miss? So kind of like also on the writing of the description for each post, what was more successful, what was not more successful, like, you know, kind of playing around with it, as well as Also, we start referring during the shows. If, for example, we had an episode with Melina Palmer where we talked about economical behaviors for marketing, right? And we start talking about storytelling. So I referred back to a previous episode that we talked about storytelling for marketing. So also, if you know that two guests, for example, will be like a question kind of aligned with another show, go ahead and drop names of previous episodes during the interview. That's very helpful. And another thing that we're playing with recently is at the end of each show, we'll do a pre-intro of the next show. So this way, be like, okay, and stick in for the next episode, which we're going to talk with this person for this topic. Yep. So this way, you'd build the interest there.
Totally.
And they'll be able to hit the subscribe
button. Give you the hook for it, too.
Yeah, so it's a lot of strategies with it. I know it sounds a lot when you first talk about it, because like, oh my God, what do I do first? But that's what I'm saying. It's also a learning curve with it itself to begin with. So it's a lot of back end and a lot of people sometimes, like for the listeners, if you don't realize, like for a final 10 minute podcast episode, you have at least an hour and a half back end work on it.
Oh, at least
if you want to make it good. So a lot of people also don't realize how much work goes on the behind the scenes too.
Yeah. And
sorry, that was a lot of information, but like we changed a lot of strategies around it. Podcast, you know, Podfest Global happened, learned a lot from it too myself. I was treating it more like the business correlation and the content and for the longest time. And also like my podcast, my very first name was RM Podcast FL, which is like the dumbest name ever. But I just had an idea and I went for it. So after the name changed to Coffee with Romina, and we changed the intro, we changed like a lot of things changed on itself. The website changed, the branding colors, like we dived in a little bit more because I was doing everything for my clients and I didn't have enough time for myself.
Yeah.
I got two girls to work on my team to help me, with a whole podcast portion of it. That's when we'd be able to see the whole growth right now.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think I maybe missed it, but the total amount of downloads in April, did you mention that?
Yeah, it was close to 10 to 11 thousand.
Awesome.
Yeah, cool. So April and May they were the highest. So name change happened in February, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. And then so February, March, April, May, like this have been the months that have just rocketed a whole nother thing. Yeah. Sweet.
So
yeah, I think it was like February, mid-February when we changed the name.
Okay.
If I remember it right.
Well, we got to wrap up here because we're getting a little bit outside of the typical realm of this podcast as far as length goes. So where can people, obviously your podcast, Coffee with Romina, where can people connect with you, website, LinkedIn, all that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on any social with the handle Connect with Romina, as well as my website is connectwithromina.com. My last name is long and weird, you guys, so just look Connect with Romina or Coffee with Romina. I would be able to find me anywhere. Awesome. SEOs are doing their thing.
Thanks so much, Romina. And for the listener, Romina is spelled R-O-M-I-N-A. So make sure you get that in there. So thanks, Romina, for being on the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Do you want your audio quality to stand out from the crowd? The secret sauce comes down to the mastering process. Mastering your audio can make your podcast stand out and be easy on the ears, but it can also be oftentimes confusing and time-consuming. But it doesn't have to be. I use a tool called Remaster Media to make the mastering process quick and easy. And you can hear the difference. So right now I am talking without any mastering to my track. But here is what I sound with the remastered plugin. Again, without remastering right now, they have multiple profiles to choose from. So no matter the voice or music mix, you can find something that makes you proud of your audio. Now again, I'm back on remastered. So I encourage you to check them out and see the difference between how you sound with or without them. They have a plugin for your current editing software or a web application for those who want to try before they buy.